Welcome along to this latest Fraser of Allender podcast. My name's Graham Roy and I'm director of the Fraser of Allender Institute. I'm delighted to joining both me and my colleagues, Emma Congreve and Mary Spouse today. We have John McIntosh, partner at Deloitte, to talk us through our take on recent developments and how it's impacting on the Scottish economy. You know that yesterday we published our latest Fraser of Allender economic commentary, where we set out what we see as being the main developments and the implications for Scottish economy and the Scottish business space. And what we want to do in this podcast is really walk you through some of that analysis and some of our recent thinking on these latest developments. And I guess a brief overview of what we'll discuss and what we talked about in our commentary was that I think what we're seeing is that this large-scale mothballing of our economy in response to the public health emergency is unlike anything we've seen since the Second World War. Now, of course, the public health response is the most important thing at this moment in time, and the health emergency and the potential implications for families and individuals involved is really serious. But we are in a major economic shock. We always knew that a global pandemic was one of the major risks that faced the global economy, but the pace at which this crisis escalated has caught many off guard. Now, on the one hand, assuming that the public health emergency will pass in the coming months, the hope of many has been that the economy should come out the other side with only a relatively limited hit to its long-term productive capacity. However, that looks increasingly over-optimistic. The scale of the shutdown that we're seeing in the economy is so large, it will take years to recover from this. Now, key will be ensuring that long-term scarring effects from any recession can really be mitigated as much as possible. But we also know that the economy that emerges from this, from the shops on the high street through to day-to-day work practices, will actually look quite different. So there's a lot to discuss, and that's what we'll be doing in the next few minutes. If I could hand over to Mary Spouse, first of all, Mary, could you give us your take on what you see as being the most important developments and implications for the Scottish economy?
Yeah, so like most recessions, it's likely that particular sectors of the economy will be more impacted than others, both over this period of shutdown, but also long-term. So initially, it was certainly the case that mostly people were worried about sectors that are impacted by a reduction in social spending. So sectors such as hospitality and tourism, you know, for over a week and a half now, they've been effectively shut down, and they were actually shut down last Friday completely. So your pubs, bars, restaurants, gyms and other leisure spending is completely shut off now, and that is a significant part of the economy. So for example, you know, around 13% of the Scottish economy and almost 20% of employment is made up of these sorts of sectors. So you can see that if these are shut down for long periods of time, this will have a significant impact on output in the Scottish economy. But I think it's also true that in the long term, we may expect these sectors to look quite different in the future. And if we think about it from a kind of regional point of view across Scotland, these sectors are much more prevalent in particular areas of Scotland. And we're thinking here particularly about rural areas of Scotland who might be particularly impacted by these effects.
And one of the things which we deliberately avoided doing in the commentary this time was trying to put a number on the trajectory for what happened to GDP or employment over the next few weeks, because it's just far too uncertain to know what might happen. But a broad estimate, what do you think we're kind of looking at in terms of overall scale of hit to the economy?
It is really difficult to know. We've said at the moment that we can expect at least a high single digits or even double digit dip in the economy. But all of this just depends on how long these large swathes of the economy are shut down. It's a significant proportion of the economy that is now shut down. So the longer that these are not producing, the larger the hit that we're going to see to our economy. And one of the interesting things is looking back over recent years is that the economy has been growing much more slowly than would historically be classed as normal. So since the financial crisis, the economy's been growing generally at half the rate we would have seen prior to that. So it wasn't in a particularly resilient place anyway. So it'll be interesting to see how long the shutdown lasts. And only then will we really know what the impact will be on the economy over the whole of the year.
Yeah, and I guess we'll come to that when we speak to Emma about the implications for families and the positions that they've been in. I mean, that's very much the macro picture. But if I could turn to John, could you give us your reflections from the overall business space and what's happening from that perspective?
Yes, I think my first reaction was, this is different. You know, this is genuinely unprecedented. We use that word a lot, but this just definitely does qualify. And I think Mary mentioned, the pace of change has just been quite remarkable. Who could imagine that most shops would have been closed just over a week ago when we were first dealing with this? And it's also affecting all sectors, clearly some much more than others. But it is really across the whole of the Scottish economy. One of the challenges is we simply don't know how long this will last. You know, it's a health crisis, and until we have some idea of when it's going to come to an end, you can't really start to adapt and decide how you're going to respond to that. But at the same time, there have been some positives come out of it. Those of us who are working from home, I think, have all been pleasantly surprised that the technology does work. And I think as we come out of this and we move forward, as we will, things will change. People will want to work from home more, I suspect.
And one of the things that you kind of touched on about that this is so fast moving and the pace of change, even though the last week has really been significant. But one of the challenges is that thinking ahead to when this will end, so we've had policies for 12 weeks, but then expectations this might be months, but then concerns about a double wave or an escalation and things. I guess that for businesses, that must be a particularly challenging addition to all of this. So not only are they having to effectively shut down for a period of time, it's that uncertainty about what happens next.
Absolutely. Businesses are always going to cope with uncertainties to a certain extent, but this is just very different. It's very different from anything people have been accustomed to. And how do you adapt? Everybody's having to scramble around a bit at the moment, but there are methodologies and tools being developed to help people to cope. And I want to remain positive. We will get through this. There's no doubt. It's just a question how long it's going to take.
Yeah, and I guess that's one of the important things I think to remember in all of this. Again, how different this is in terms of a recession, in that it's been an unprecedented hit to business activity and individual businesses. So from previous recessions, you might be thinking of percentage falls in output. Here you're essentially telling them to stop work. So it's not a fall, it's a complete shut off of demand. But then against, in contrast to something like the financial crisis, the productive capacity of the economy is still there. Now, obviously, that will gradually get eaten into the longer this shutdown goes on for. But the underlying structure of our economy, the demand that will be there for businesses, the prosperity that's there, will still be there when the public health emergency ends. And that's the challenge, I guess, in all of this. It's about businesses being able to bridge through the shutdown to coming back to some form of normality. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yes, and I think businesses need to, I'm sure we'll come on to discuss this, but businesses need to put a plan in place for how they're going to get through this. They need to work out how much money do they need for how long, and then how are they going to find it? Looking to the various funding schemes that the government have provided is obviously one of the first things you want to do.
Great. And turning, Emma, from a kind of a household perspective, clearly, again, as John said, this is unprecedented for what's happening to households and the pace and the scale of everyone's lives have changed. Can you give us some reflections on on what this all means for individuals and households in this context.
Yeah, thanks, Graham. So I suppose this crisis has really highlighted the fact that it's people that are at the heart of the economy, and it's people that are at the heart of this crisis. So it's very much impacts on people who have been infected by the virus and their families who are self-isolating, but then also the big shutdown that has been as a result of all this to try and contain the virus. And it's those restrictions on people which is what is causing the problems for business and the economy. I think it's really interesting in this crisis in that it isn't going to affect everybody in the same way. As John was saying, some people can work from home and are very much able to continue to operate, and the businesses they work for will continue to operate, probably, and can do so for quite a long time. But for other people, their whole sort of livelihoods have been taken away. It almost feels like overnight. And the ability for people to be able to adjust to that sort of thing that quickly, it's very uncertain, and it's whether people have any buffers in place in order to be able to withstand a cut in earnings. So we did some analysis looking at the amount of savings that people in different parts of the income distribution have, and it's clear that some people do not have savings that can see them through even a month without their regular earnings. And so households, depending on who they are and what sectors they're in and what type of occupation they're in, will be dealing with this or able to deal with this in very different ways. So I think that's something we have to obviously realise when we're talking about affect different parts of the economy in different ways. What we're actually saying is it's going to affect different people in very different ways.
And one of the things which I guess if you compare it to previous suspensions in demand like this, so if you take something like The Beast in the East, it had a dramatic fall off in demand, and then the economy bounced back. So people could almost pause their lives and get through a relatively short-term disruption like that. But I guess what you're talking about is you move into this where it's a longer shutdown and families are going to be impacted for even longer. That's where we start to worry about the scarring effects on individuals and households that may take some time to come through, and what that might mean for individuals' long-term prosperity and well-being too.
Yeah, and this I suppose is the kind of the financial side of this, in that it might mean that people are sort of forced to take on debt or get into rent arrears. Fortunately, it looks like there won't be evictions in the private rental sector as a result of this due to the government legislation that's come in, but there certainly will be people potentially building up quite a lot of debt to get through this process. But also there's the issues of kind of I suppose psychological scarring as well. Like any period of time in financial hardship is very difficult to deal with, especially if you don't know when it's going to end. So those effects on people's sort of their mindset and their mental health could be quite severe, and particularly for children caught up in those situations as well. We know that any period of time spent in poverty is has long lasting effects on things like health and educational attainment and things like that. So it is really worrying that there will be people that will just see their earnings just disappear. And I think that obviously we've seen some measures put in place by the government that might help with some of that, which I think we'll come on to talk about in a minute.
Yeah, and just turning back to Mary, I mean, Emma's talking and John's talking about how the different sectors and different individuals be impacted, and businesses need to prepare for all of that. There's also a regional dimension to all of this as well, particularly in an economy like Scotland, where sectors look quite different in different parts of the country, and they will have both short-term and long-term implications as well.
Absolutely. So we mentioned hospitality earlier, which whilst it dominates and you know, and it's a large part of the economy in lots of bits of Scotland, it's particularly important in you know, the Highlands and Islands and rural areas of Scotland, where a significant proportion of employment is reliant on activities associated with tourism. But it isn't just tourism. There's other issues like oil and gas, for example, and things like that, which may be impacted and have quite obviously quite a regional dimension as well. So there's definitely the possibility that some sort of more precarious communities anyway, you know, who are looking at long-term challenges like an aging population and perhaps keeping young people staying in the area, could find that this current crisis sort of exacerbates those problems in the long term.
And so we've spoken a bit about the immediate impact and the potential significance for that means for businesses and individuals and localities, etc. But as John said, you know, that in many ways the important thing is to look to the medium to longer term, when public health crisis will wash through and hopefully we'll get through this as safely as possible, but then we'll get to a point where the economy will start to recover again. And I guess that's one of the challenges there for businesses, is to be able to think through in these different dimensions about immediate support, but then also where things might recover in the longer term. So what kind of advice would you be giving, John, to businesses in the current time to deal with these different aspects?
I think I group these into three broad areas. I think around your people, your clients, and your business. So you want to reassure your people, you want to keep talking to your clients, and you need to protect your business. So I think with your people, it's really important that you're visible, you're proactive, you're communicating with them openly, letting them know what you're doing and how they can contribute. And trying to get, you know, bring the people together in some way. I know that's harder for some businesses than others, but, you know, I'd never heard of a virtual coffee morning until just over a week ago, and I've been on several since. So use the technology that's available to try and bring your people together, maintain their morale. With your clients, then, it's important to keep in touch. Again, that's easier for some sectors than others, but staying silent is not an option. You find out how you can help them. You know, that will help your business in the long run. Customers, clients, they'll remember what you do now and how you help them. And then finally, protect your business. You know, at a time like this, the adage "cash is king" comes to the fore. So, prepare a cash flow, work out how much money you need, how long for, and then how you're going to go about finding that. You know, some bigger businesses which have got bank facilities that they haven't drawn down on, they've been drawing down on those. Clearly, there's all the government schemes which are being made available. So you want to get your suitability for these. So the job retention scheme is clearly the most important one in a whole lot of sectors. The money in that is going to be made available hopefully in a few weeks. And clearly, getting that money out as fast as possible must be a key aim. And certainly the scheme is going to be up by the end of April, so that will give 80% of salary up to a maximum of £2,500 a month. But there are other schemes. There are grants for smaller businesses in hospitality and leisure. There's rates reliefs. There's various loan packages available. And certainly when it comes to tax, then there are time to pay arrangements where you can defer paying your corporation tax or LLC. These arrangements have always been in place, or the scheme has always been in place, and now companies can make use of that. And the experience to date is HMRC are being very, very flexible, and also dealing with them very quickly. So that would be my suggestion of those three areas: your people, your clients, and protect your business.
And that's very helpful and very good advice. And the point about the government's support for this and the policy response has really been quite extraordinary in many ways, that the government, by standing behind business and supporting them as much as possible. We'll come on to the long-term potential implications of that, but I think everyone's, you know, been very supportive and welcomed the overall approach from government to both governments, both here in the Scottish government, but also the UK government, and obviously the support from the Bank of England as well, to essentially act as this bridging mechanism and to partner with businesses through as much as we can into to the point when the economy will start to still start to recover. Mary, I mean, do you have any reflections on the policy response from government and a business side? And then maybe I'll turn to Emma for some reflections on the support mechanisms for households, and what might be quite interesting is any areas that you see where there might be further activity or further support needed.
Yeah, so I mean, as you say, the package that the government's announced has been quite unprecedented, and it's come in a number of forms. You know, there's been the Bank of England response to try and ensure liquidity in the economy as much as possible. But the really, really unprecedented stuff has been the fiscal policy announcements by the Chancellor, and then subsequently by the Scottish Government for Scottish businesses. So the amount of money that's being made available in the form of loans is extraordinary. But as John mentioned earlier, there's also been a series of business rates, both holidays and cuts, but also through the business rates system, also a series of grants that are available for smaller businesses and those in the hospitality and leisure sector. So, I mean, overall, the amounts of money that this is potentially being pumped into the economy, as you say, to get it through. And really what the point of all of this is to ensure that otherwise completely viable businesses don't go out of business because they have to shut down during this period. So, yeah, I mean, the measures announced are phenomenally expensive, but the government just can't afford not to do them at the moment to get the economy through to when it can sort of pick up again.
Yeah, and I think someone, I can't recall who, has described this very much as an investment, not just in the public health of the country, but actually it's an investment in the economy as well. And the time at some point to think about how we then readjust and pay for this is down in the future, but there's simply no, you know, comparison. This is the right thing to do, to both from a public health perspective, but also from an economic resilience perspective. And we'll come on to some of the longer term things later about what this might mean for the relationship between state and the economy.
Absolutely. And whilst these policy measures have been, you know, widely welcomed, and quite rightly so, you know, they're obviously that there has been a bit of difficulty with the kind of practicalities of all of this, you know. So just because these loans are there doesn't mean that either banks are willing to lend or companies are willing to take on debt at this time. So sort of working that through and ensuring that businesses are able to get the finance they need is important. Local authorities have been working really hard to get in place the mechanisms for companies to access these grants, which has obviously taken a couple of weeks to sort of get set up and get in place. So there are these kind of practical issues that come through these large announcements, which then need to be administered to ensure that the cash actually gets to the businesses that require it as quickly as possible.
And I think that touches on a point that John was making around, you know, the strategy of business. One of the things for business at the moment must be about reaching out and being aware of the mechanism and schemes that are in place. And actually many businesses that have probably never had any reason at all to interact with government on a significant scale or accessing government supports, could have been doing it, you know, through the private sector. So being aware of these schemes and being able to access them, and so there's an onus on businesses as well, not just on the government to make them work, but actually on businesses being prepared to reach out and access these various mechanisms.
Absolutely. And one of the main ones that we're waiting for more details on and waiting to get put in place is obviously the job retention scheme that John mentioned. And there is a bit of a hiatus now when some businesses aren't sure exactly how it's going to work and what they should do with their employees kind of in the meantime. So there's probably more that can be done to reassure employers that they, you know, they can do the right thing and furlough their employees in order to take advantage of the scheme when it actually is finally in place.
Okay, and Emma, from a household perspective, we've seen in recent days a significant increase in people for universal credit and various other schemes. But can you give us your reflections on the various policy responses from that perspective?
Yeah, so the job retention scheme that Mari just talked about there will be a really key part of this for households and employees, because it will ensure that they are able to keep a decent proportion of their salary despite the company not being able to operate. So that will be really key. And yes, there will be a lot of people that feel much more secure because that has been offered, but might still be waiting to get that full reassurance that they're going to be included in that. So that's a really key one. And keeping people attached to their employers in some way will be really important for when these restrictions are lifted as well, so people can quickly get back to work and earning their normal income. But for other people, and we are still waiting for more details of a scheme which is promised for the self-employed. We believe we'll be getting details on that later today. But for other people who are not being offered the furlough or have been let go, and for people who rely on their themselves for self-employed or for people that aren't on contracts, so for them there is a lot of uncertainty still abound, and a lot do appear to be going to the social security system for support, and hence we've seen massive caseload increases going through those systems. So there is support there, but the amount of money that you're entitled to for universal credit, it's not huge, and it's probably going to be a big drop in normal income for a lot of households. I think maybe some people have been surprised about how little actually is available through universal credit. And we have seen actually an increase over the last week promised, because, to boost the amount that comes through a little bit, but it's still going to be a huge drop for people. But at least that safety net is there. So it is some comfort for people. And if it's only temporary, then perhaps people will be able to get through that period and cut back on their costs significantly and make it through. But yeah, we would hope that there's a decent support system coming through for the self-employed in particular, and that there's sort of a rethinking that might go on a bit longer about, how do you give support to people who, the factors out with their control, lose their earnings overnight, and perhaps it will lead to some kind of debate about the role of the social security system, because this isn't going to be the only crisis that comes along, I'm sure, in the next few while. Probably it will be an interesting debate in the future, but for now it's just ensuring that people have certainty that they're going to get some money, and hopefully that the systems the government put in place can deal with the huge amounts of people that will be trying to access it.
And you touch on a really important point, which is that I guess the final part of our conversation today about the future and what happens next, and debates about the balance between state and support and social security net, and this social security net that exists for people. And typically in a recession, this probably more so than others, we know that we'll come out of it because the public health issue will pass. But in every recession, there's always three stages. There's the pain, the pain of the hit of the downturn, but then there's the adjustment as people start to adjust to that normality and potentially respond. But then also, as John touched on, there's the opportunity. So as things start to pick up again, then there's prospects and new employment opportunities, new investment opportunities, demand comes back in stream. But one of the things that's quite interesting, I think, and we touched on this in the commentary again yesterday, was saying, well, actually, so our economy will return, but what will return to? That new normal might look quite different in individual sectors. Companies will have changed. It will have big implications for wider debates we're having at the moment about things like climate change, about inequalities, about well-being. So perhaps we could maybe end this conversation just to get the three of your reflections on what might be fundamentally changed as a result of this crisis. And again, what might businesses or the wider Scottish economy be able to do to position itself to take advantage of that new normal when it comes?
Well, I'll start just by saying a little bit about, you know, how the sort of the labour market and particularly for low earners, how things might change a little bit. And I think we will see some sectors really diminish. So we know that traditional retail, or non-food retail anyway, has had a tough time of it for many years. And because of what's happened, many stores have shut temporarily, but they may not all decide that they can reopen. It might be sort of acceleration of some of the decline in traditional high streets. So obviously it's really hard to know if that will be the case or not, but if it is, there's a lot of people that work in those areas that are fairly low pay. A lot of women work in kind of part-time jobs in retail. So there could be a real shift in the availability of jobs in that area. I think there'll also be a bit of a debate about, you know, people that are just so exposed to risk, people on very precarious contracts and 0 hours contracts. Like, is that acceptable? Because they've just been, you know, really, really, this crisis has really, really shown how exposed some people are to factors that will just that happen that they have no control over. And is that the kind of society and economy that we wish to operate? I think some of those questions will come to the fore, and actually really should come to the fore, because we do need to decide about how we protect you know, each person in society, both in a health crisis and when we're not in a health crisis.
Thanks, Emma. And John, some final reflections from you?
Well, I think that the legacy effects could be really quite substantial. I think we'll almost certainly see more working from home. This is going to prove it can work, and that may be good for lots of people, great for the environment, but not great if you're a travel company. I think what the crisis has exposed is the vulnerabilities of global supply chains. So I think we can expect to see more onshoring. There's been lots of examples quoted about things like medicines, where, for example, I think in the States, most of their antibiotics come from China. You just can't believe that going forward, countries will want to leave themselves exposed in that situation. So you can see sort of a reverse of the globalization trends. At the same time, I think an event like this also proves that we have to cooperate on a global basis, because this crisis cannot be defeated in an individual country. It's got to be defeated on a global basis. There's going to be much more debt. Countries, companies, households are going to have much more debt. That has the potential for limiting growth as we go forward, as people try to pay that debt down. And I think coming back to one of Emma's points about risk, people, organisations may just become more risk averse. This has been a huge shock. And if we all become more cautious, that will also limit growth going forward.
Great, thank you. And Mary, some final reflections from you on the Scottish economy and how that might be impacted longer term.
Yeah, I think Emma's right. I think one of the obvious sectors that was already struggling prior to this was traditional retail. And I think it's likely that there's going to be long-term effects from this crisis on that sector. And it's just accelerated probably some of the decline. And we've already seen some stores close that probably may not reopen in that sector. So that's definitely true. And whilst hospitality sectors will come back when people are there to spend money again, and there's likely to be long-term effects on businesses that were sort of quite marginal during this before this crisis, who won't open again. So I can't imagine that industry will look the same as it did before, even if you're just looking at it from a regional perspective in Scotland. And the impact that's likely to have on some remote and rural communities may be quite significant and long term. I think what Emma was talking about in terms of whether it's acceptable that there are so many people in quite precarious circumstances, which has been highlighted by this, is interesting. And, you know, the degree with which the state has stepped in here is completely unprecedented. And basically the state have stepped forward, they've said to business, take a step back and shut down and we will support you through. And it does sort of beg the question whether this would be a more typical response in future recessions, for example, if the sort of social contract between the state and business is kind of, you know, irreversibly changed through this whole process of state support for business. And more long term, I suppose, given the scale of the state response to deal with this crisis, it does beg the question about future crises that might be coming along, things like how we deal with climate change and whether there's more of a willingness to grasp the nettle and do the things we must do in order to deal with these large global issues.
Excellent, thank you. And these are really big questions and really interesting questions. So we'll no doubt return to these in future podcasts and to get your reflections on that. Can I just thank you, Mary, John and Emma, for your time today to participate in this podcast. Further details of what we've spoken about were published in our commentary yesterday in partnership with Deloitte. Keep up to date with various material we're producing through our blog at www.fraserofallander.org, and we hope to see you all soon. Thank you.